Greetings and a warm welcome to another edition of Debate Live from Tehran with me, your host, Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Now, Iraqis have held their first parliamentary elections since Daesh terror group was defeated in the country. Nearly 45% of the electorate showed up in the polling stations on Saturday. Prime Minister Abadi's list is set to be in the lead, with cleric Mustafa Muqtada al-Sadr's list trailing. Now, final results are expected to be out soon. Let's bring in our Baghdad correspondent, Altaf Ahmed, who has first-hand account of the major vote in Iraq. Altaf, over to you.
Well, we are waiting anxiously for the final announcement of the results of Iraq's parliamentary elections, the first parliamentary elections the country has seen since the fall of Daesh and the fourth since the toppling of former dictator Saddam Hussein. Now, there are a lot of news regarding the final results. There are suspicions going on, also tensions simmering between some blocs who are accusing others of manipulation and of tampering with the results, namely in the Iraqi oil city of Kirkuk, northern Iraq, where Iraq's Arabs and Turkmen are accusing some Kurdish political parties of manipulating with the results. Also, Kurdish tensions are also simmering as Kurdish opposition groups are accusing ruling parties in Iraqi Kurdistan of also manipulating with the results. Other than that, Iraqi Prime Minister
We just had bad connection. We've lost contact with our correspondent, Altaf Ahmed. She earlier told me that there have been lots of criticisms about the way that the ballots are counted, especially in the province, the Kurdish province of Kirkuk. Now, let's bring in our guests. We have a couple of them for today from Baghdad. We have former Iraqi government spokesman and head of the government support initiative, Laith Kuba. And also from London, we have Iraq affairs expert Zaid al-Issa. Now, beginning with Laith Kuba in Baghdad, but let us have your comments first to begin with the future of Iraq, because it seems that Prime Minister Abadi's list is in the lead and looks like that he will be taking over the realm of the Iraqi affairs, actually. Again, how do you see the future of Iraq with the Prime Minister Abadi assuming power again?
Well, to start with, it's a quite a progressive and a positive step that another round of election took place, despite all the talk on the side. I think the turnout is decent. Of course, the slight drop is a signal to the politicians. But now phase two of the process will start, where the leaders of these blocs and lists will negotiate. I think what we saw in the last 4 years with Prime Minister Abadi, he adopted a program of national unity and a national agenda and delivered on it at exceptionally difficult circumstances. So I think he is in a good position to start negotiating. I think it's to his advantage that the major political blocs or groups have broken down and fragmented more than before. I think the country is looking to a new phase where the focus will be on building the economy, building the state, restoring the country's sovereignty. I think all these indications tell me that we are entering a new phase, and the new government will not be based on, let's say, representation from different sects or groups. So it's a positive move, and I, of course, it'll take a few weeks before they reach an agreement and they reach a cabinet.
Okay, Zaid al-Issa in London, do you share the same views with Mr. Laith Kuba?
Well, I do contest the fact that what happened yesterday in the vote was a far cry from what we witnessed all over in the three past elections, where we've seen waves of people defying the terrorists, defying the Ba'athists, and braving the bombs and bullets to take part in the elections. Yesterday was in stark contrast. The situation was very calm, and we've seen that the people have been demotivated, disheartened, and we've seen the electorate deeply skeptical and highly disillusioned and disenfranchised. And I do believe that there is a well a widespread belief that there is a growing belief that there is no real concrete change taking place. And I do believe that the Al-Sistani merger was absolutely clear when he lended all his support, throwing his weight and support in 2015 behind Ibadi, telling him to be more courageous, to tackle corruption and uproot those corrupt officials, to name and shame, and to basically tackle all sorts of widespread graft. I think he has thrown his support, and the results are deeply discouraging. I do believe that there hasn't been a concerted, relentless effort to uproot those corrupt officials who have, as the Merjed Sistani spokesman said, that the those who are in position of power have used and abused their positions to line up their pockets. They have deceived the people with empty promises, and this have come back to haunt the political process. I do believe that this should send shockwaves right across the political process, that should set alarm bells ringing. And I do believe, again, the spokesman of the merger was absolutely clear when he said there is no change of the main leaders. I do believe that when we talk about achievements on the battlefield, they haven't been translated into reviving the economy. And the people do not believe that there is a good, real justification. Just because we were fighting ISIS, then those corrupt officials that haven't put their money where their mouth is, and they have been behaving in an appalling manner, shouldn't have been rooted out a long time ago. So I do believe many chances have been missed, and this political process have to be revived and its credibility and legitimacy restored. And I do believe that Ibadi has missed so many chances. He has been backed up to the hilt in an unprecedented, unrivaled way, and I do believe he has spectacularly failed to deliver on many fronts, particularly fighting corruption, craft, and also the economy.
Mr. Zadali, so we'll come to that issue later on in the show. Now let me ask Laith Kuba about the situation of the United States. We have American boots in Iraq, and ISIS or Daesh has been defeated. What do you think should happen? The U.S. definitely seeks to maintain a military presence in Iraq.
I think the major issue is not about the U.S. The history between Iraq and the U.S. is very complex, very long, and of course full of controversies. And I think the real issue is not about the U.S. This is a challenge that Iraqis first have to resolve amongst themselves. Let me just, if you allow me, just to make a couple of comments about the colleague Zaid and the remarks he made.
Sure, go ahead.
We need to take two steps back and look at the situation. What I share all the sentiments, and of course the sentiments that are expressed by Sayed Sistani, but take two steps back and ask, what is the mechanism? How can change be brought about? It cannot be brought about a coup, and it cannot be dictated just from the top. There ought to be a process. And of course, the process is painful, but without that process, there will be chaos and violence. So I think we have to be careful here. Yes, we are disappointed with the political parties, but what we saw in Iraq in the last 15 years is the outcome of a process that the Americans have set up in Iraq. They've set up the constitution. It is full of faults. They brought in political groups from exile who are not best positioned to lead. They rushed the country. They dismantled many state institutions. So in that respect, America has a lot to answer for what happened in Iraq. Being as it is, Iraq has inherited that situation, and they have to start rebuilding their country. We have to come down to earth and rebuild it. I think we made some progress. The last 15 years were extremely disappointing, painful. The country, four years from now, I think the bet was Iraq was lost, it's divided, it's gone, it's failed, etc. Today, Iraq is standing on its feet. It had one more round of elections. Yes, there are scars, and some people did not show up, by the way, just for the record. when people showed up in the high numbers, it was a statement believing in democracy, and it was also a reaction to, let's say, existential challenges, be it sectarian or ethnic. Today, this issue is behind us. There are no existential threats, sectarian or ethnic.
Okay,
and I think the country, for the first time, is looking to a program, to a future program.
All right.
So that's a different ball game altogether,
and it
requires different political needs.
We'll come to that. Mr. Zaidalisa, I'll let you comment on that. But I just wanted to remind Mr. Kuba that the turnout was not that great. It was almost less than 45% this time. Now, Mr. Zaidalisa, if you want to have your comment on his remarks, go ahead, please.
Well, I have to say, for any genuine democracy, depending on the turnout, it was hugely disappointing, and it indicates and underlines the disaffection of the people. And what we really needs to worry us and set alarm bells ringing, that we're talking about the bastions, we're talking about the heartland of the Shia, we're talking about where the Shia political parties have their bedrock support. So people are disheartened, disenfranchised, and I do believe that Abadi had 4 years of power. He was the one calling the shots. He was the one running the show, and he had unequivocal, unqualified backing to the hilt from the Merger Al-Sistani. That was in 2015, and all he needed to do is to actually rout those highly incompetent officials that he relied upon, and I do believe that he knows, your guest, that when Ibadi stood for power, he was backed up to the hilt by Muqtada Sadr, by also Ammar al-Hakim, who stood through thick and thin by him, trying to prop him up, and yet he has failed to deliver. And when he says it's irrelevant bringing in the Americans, he's contradicting himself. Then in a minute later, he says, well, it's all the Americans' fault. I do agree that the Americans played a detrimental role, and I do believe that it is also the Americans who tried to weaken the Iraqi government to ensure that this government and the next government are always highly dependent, highly reliant, and they do need the Americans in every aspect in Iraq to maintain security in Iraq. And if you stating that Iraq is standing now on its feet, why do we necessarily need to keep those Americans? And why have Ibadi played a major role in covering up the tracks of the American, hiding their presence? And why do John Kerry comes to Iraq in 2016 and he says to Ibadi, you can remove the entire government, but look, to everyone in Iraq, Ibadi is a red line. Nobody can remove Ibadi. So he has been backed up to that.
So
and
Lisa,
I do need to stress one point.
Yep.
One point
briefly,
which is
please.
Very important. What is happening now is that there is a concerted, relentless effort by Saudi Arabia and by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, who is backed up to the hilt by Trump, in order to steer and wane Iraq off Iran and to lure it into the orbit of the Saudi Arabia. So it is all about steering Iraq away, driving a wedge between Iraq and Iran. And this has been all over the news circulated, that Ibadi's main challenge is to fend up the rise and the growing popularity of the popular movement, mobilization forces, and the conquest bloc, which is heavily backed up and which is immensely popular by the Iraqi people because of the major role it played in fighting back and beating back ISIS. So it shouldn't be the reward that we should listen to Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman or Trump to dismantle them.
You just made a couple of points. Let's go back to Laith Kuba and have his reaction, both regarding the U.S. Troops that the other guest, Ms. Alisa, believes that Iraqis are asking for this, and also the Saudi saga that you just mentioned. Please, let's have your reaction.
Well, as far as the military presence, I am not a military expert, but I can tell you up until last week, there were airstrikes by Iraqi pilots into Syria targeting positions for the Daesh group and others. So we have still a war going on our borders, and our borders are not secure. And what we saw before, we know the situation is still in flux. So I don't know the details, but I do know we are not living under normal conditions. So we're in a very tense position. And as I said, I am not in a position to comment about that, but I am aware of the circumstances surrounding Iraq. As far as the second issue, of course, Iraq is important. And there are many countries, Iran, Turkey, even Kuwait, has an agenda in Iraq, and they would like to push and pull the government one way or the other. And of course, the U.S., with its grand agenda now, raising tension in the region,
aligning with Saudi Arabia. I'm sorry, Mr. Kuba, if you could please focus on the Saudi agenda for the time being. We'll come to others later.
Sure. As I said, there is currently a rivalry taking place in the region, and the temperature is going up. And no question that Iraq is a big country, and it's going to impact the region. And without a question that Iran has its own outlook to Iraq, its own cards to play. Saudi Arabia is trying to catch up and have some influence. America had influence, lost it, trying to rebuild it. I think the last 4 years proved that Prime Minister Abadi played a very good role in holding the stick right in the middle, looking after Iraq's interests first, not Iran's, not Saudi, not American, not anybody's. It's Iraq's interest that should come first for the Iraqis. This is his duty and obligation. I think he gets credit from everybody that he did it well. He assured everybody he will never allow Iraq to be used against Iran as it did under Saddam Hussein. But at the same time, Iraq is not a tool, neither in the hands of Iran nor in anybody's. Restoring Iraq's sovereignty, integrity, independence, and role in the region is the primary task of any future prime minister. This should be respected by everybody and accepted by everybody. It's okay. A challenge for the Iraqi government to exert that authority, but this is what is likely to happen in years to come.
Mr. Kuba, and what is your speculation regarding the power makeup? You know, they are given a 90-day period to, after the results are out, of course, to form a new government. What do you think the makeup will be? Will it be any different from the other one?
Well, of course, this is going to be subject to negotiations. We will know the results in a couple of hours, 3 hours from now. We will know the results. They will negotiate. And I have reasons to believe that there will be an influence from Iran, from America, from Saudi Arabia on the various factions trying to influence the outcome. But I also believe that the tension in the region is so high currently. We saw events in Syria. We are seeing statements from Iran. We saw tension in Yemen escalating. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants instability, and nobody wants more tension in the region. So if there is going to be a preference by all players, I think the preference is to try to keep the temperature down in Iraq rather than gamble with an unknown figure or an extreme figure who will take Iraq and will take the region into further adventures. So my hunch, the internal process will take place amongst the various players. We know that the bloc led by Abadi and the bloc led by Muqtada Sadr are amongst the largest leading currently. We don't know the exact numbers, but it will take quite an alliance to be built to secure the 168, I think that's the magic number that is needed to form a government.
Okay, let's
but
go
the
to,
tendency will be from Iraq's neighbors to keep it calm.
Okay, yes. Let's go to Mr. Zayed Alisa in London. Mr. Alisa, Mr. Kuba said that other countries are also trying to wield their influence, like Iran is going to influence the vote. How can this be? I mean, the voting was done electronically. I mean, and the results are being out. They were talking about some maybe technical glitches and some irregularities of different kinds when I was talking to our correspondents an hour ago in Kirkuk especially. That's why maybe the results are not out yet. Let us have your comments on that. And Mr.
Well,
also, but the fact also,
that
I forgot one more thing. Sorry to interrupt you. And Mr. Kuba said that Mr. Labadi thought about Iraq and not Iran, not Saudi Arabia, not the U.S. Let's have your comment.
I do believe that what Al-Abadi found an opening, and he has been basically selling himself or touting himself as the guy who could hold the stick in the middle. I don't believe that this is the case. There is no comparison between the position of Iran, who backed up Iraq to the hilt when ISIS was about on the verge of actually taking up and occupying Baghdad, when the US and the Saudis at the same time has pressed the Americans and told them this is an internal uprising against marginalization, and they warned the US of intervening, and afterwards joining the anti-ISIS coalition to put red lines on the movements of the popular mobilization, which have been the most effective in routing out ISIS. I don't believe that it is also holding the stick from the middle when Ibadi goes to America, and he tries and he actually goes out of his way to absolve and exonerate Saudi Arabia from terrorism, when it is even the American leadership who hasn't gone that far. We've heard it from the horse's mouth, from Obama, from Clinton, all of them pointing the finger of blame strongly, and even Biden. Those people are well informed. Is Ibadi more informed than those people? Does he know more classified information about the works and about the backing, the funding, the arming from Saudi Arabia? So I do believe it's the ultimate betrayal for Ibadi to go to America and tell them, look, Saudi Arabia is not responsible for funding, arming, and for supporting ISIL and Nusra Front. That is absolutely outrageous and unacceptable. And
I'm
it
afraid,
doesn't show
Mr. Al-Isa,
being neutral about it, but being endorsed
by the Americans and by the Saudis.
I
have to interrupt. We have no more time, unfortunately, to continue with that. I should thank you both, Laith Kuba, former Iraq government spokesman and head of government support initiative, joining us from Baghdad, and also Zayd Al-Isa, Iraq affairs expert, joining us from London. And that's the end of another edition of Debate here on Press TV. Thank you for staying with us, and goodbye.